I follow you. All I'm saying is make sure that you have fun while you're advancing along the path of your goals and purpose. Never forget the importance of living with unbridled exhilaration. Never neglect to see the exquisite beauty in all living things. Today, and this very moment that you and I are sharing, is a gift. Remain spirited, joyful, and curious. Stay focused on your life work and on giving selfless service to others. The universe will take care of everything else. This is one of nature's truest laws. And never regret what has happened in the past? Exactly. There is no chaos in this universe. There is a purpose for everything that has ever happened to you, and everything that will happen to you. Remember what I told you, John. Every experience offers lessons. So stop majoring in minor things. Enjoy your life. Is that it? I still have much wisdom to share with you. Are you tired? Not in the least. Actually, I feel pretty pumped up. You are quite the motivator, Julian. Have you ever thought about an infomercial? I asked mischievously. I don't understand, he replied gently. Never mind, just one of my feeble attempts at humor. Okay, before we move along with Yogi Raman's fable, there is one last point about reaching your goals and your dreams that I would like to impress on you. Go for it. There is one word that the sages spoke of in almost reverential terms. Do tell. This simple word seemed to carry a depth of meaning for them, and it peppered their daily talk. The word I am speaking of is passion, and it is a word you must constantly keep at the forefront of your mind as you follow your mission and attain your goals. A burning sense of passion is the most potent fuel for your dreams. Here in our society, we have lost our passion. We do not do things because we love to do them. We do things because we feel we have to do them. This is a formula for misery. And I am not speaking of romantic passion, although this is another ingredient for a successful, inspired existence. What I am talking about is a passion for life. Reclaim the joy of waking up every morning full of energy and exhilaration. Breathe the fire of passion into all that you do. You will quickly reap great material as well as spiritual rewards. You make it sound so easy. It is. From tonight onwards, take complete control of your life. Decide once and for all to be the master of your fate. Run your own race. Discover your calling, and you will start to experience the ecstasy of an inspired life. Finally, always remember that what lies behind you and what lies in front of you is nothing when compared to what lies within you. Thanks, Julian. I really needed to hear this. I never realized all that was lacking in my life until tonight. I have been wandering aimlessly through it, lacking a real purpose. Things are going to change, I promise you. I am grateful for this. You're welcome, my friend. I am simply fulfilling my purpose. Chapter 8. Action Summary. Julian's Wisdom in a Nutshell. The Symbol. The Towering Lighthouse. The Virtue. Follow your purpose. The Wisdom. The purpose of life is a life of purpose. Discovering and then realizing your life work brings lasting fulfillment. Set clearly defined personal, professional, and spiritual goals, and then have the courage to act on them. The techniques. The power of self-examination. The five-step method for attaining goals. Quotable quote. Never forget the importance of living with unbridled exhilaration. Never neglect to see the exquisite beauty in all living things. Today and this very moment is a gift. Stay focused on your purpose. The universe will take care of everything else. The monk who sold his Ferrari. Chapter 9. The Ancient Art of Self-Leadership. Good people strengthen themselves ceaselessly. Confucius. Time is passing quickly, said Julian, before pouring himself another cup of tea. The morning will soon be upon us. Do you want me to continue, or have you had enough for one night? There was no way that I was going to let this man, who held such gems of wisdom within his grasp, stop without completing his story. At the outset, his tale seemed fantastic, but as I listened to him, as I absorbed the ageless philosophy that had been bestowed upon him, I came to believe deeply in what he was saying. These were not the superficial, self-serving ruminations of some two-bit huckster. Julian was the real thing. He clearly walked his talk, and his message rang true. I trusted him. Please continue, Julian. I have all the time in the world. The kids are sleeping at their grandparents' house tonight, and Jenny won't be up for hours. Sensing my sincerity, he continued with the symbolic fable that Yogi Raman had offered him to illustrate his wisdom on cultivating a richer, more radiant life. I have told you that the garden represents the fertile garden of your mind, a garden that is filled with delightful treasures and boundless riches. I have also spoken of the lighthouse and how it represents the power of goals and the importance of discovering your calling in life. You will recall that as the fable continues, the door of the lighthouse slowly opens and out walks a 9-foot-tall, 900-pound Japanese sumo wrestler. Sounds like a bad Godzilla movie. I used to love those when I was a kid. Me too, but don't let me distract you, I replied. The sumo wrestler represents a very important element in the life-changing system of the sages of Sivana. Yogi Raman told me that many centuries ago in the ancient East, the great teachers developed and refined a philosophy called Kaizen. This Japanese word means constant and never-ending improvement. And it's the personal trademark of every man and woman who is living a soaring, fully awakened existence. How did the concept of Kaizen enrich the lives of the sages? I asked. As I mentioned earlier, John, success on the outside begins with success on the inside. If you really want to improve your outer world, whether this means your health, your relationships, or your finances, you must first improve your inner world. The most effective way to do this is through the practice of continuous self-improvement. Self-mastery is the DNA of life mastery. Julian, I hope you don't mind me saying it, but all this talk about one's inner world sounds more than a little esoteric to me. Remember, I'm just a middle-class lawyer from the leafy suburbs with a minivan sitting in the driveway and a lawn boy in the garage. Look, everything you have told me so far makes sense. As a matter of fact, much of what you have shared with me appears to be common sense, although I know that common sense is anything but common in this day and age. I must tell you, though, I'm having a little difficulty with this notion of Kaizen and improving my inner world. What exactly are we talking about here? Julian was agile in his response. In our society, we all too often label the ignorant as weak. However, those who express their lack of knowledge and seek instruction find the path to enlightenment before anyone else. Your questions are honest and show me that you are open to fresh ideas. Change is the most powerful force in our society today. Most people fear it. The wise embrace it. Zen tradition speaks of a beginner's mind, those who keep their minds open to new concepts, those whose cups are always empty, will always move to higher levels of achievement and fulfillment. Never be reluctant to ask even the most basic of questions. Questions are the most effective method of eliciting knowledge. Thanks, but I am still unclear about Kaizen. When I speak of improving your inner world, I am simply speaking of self-improvement and personal expansion, and it is the best thing you can do for yourself. You might think that you are too busy to spend time working on yourself. This would be a very big mistake. You see, when you have taken the time to build a strong character, full of discipline, energy, power, and optimism, you can have anything and do anything you want in your outer world. When you have cultivated a deep sense of faith in your abilities and an indomitable spirit, nothing can stop you from succeeding in all your pursuits and living with great rewards. Taking the time to master your mind, to care for the body and to nourish your soul will put you in a position to develop more richness and vitality in your life. It is as Epictetus said so many years ago, "No man is free who is not a master of himself." So Kaizen is actually a very practical concept. Very. Think about it, John. How could a person possibly lead a corporation if he cannot even lead himself? How could you nurture a family if you haven't learned to nurture and care for yourself? How could you possibly do good if you don't even feel good? Do you see my point? I nodded in full agreement. This was the first time I had given any serious thought to the importance of improving myself. I had always thought that all those people I would see on the subway reading books with titles like The Power of Positive Thinking or Mega Living were troubled souls desperate for some form of medicine to get them back on course. Now I realized that those who took the time to strengthen themselves were the strongest, and that it was only through improving oneself that one could ever hope to improve the lot of others. I then started to reflect on all the things I could improve. I could really use the added energy and good health that exercising would surely bring. Ridding myself of my nasty temper and my habit of interrupting others might do wonders for my relationship with my wife and kids. And erasing my worry habit would give me the peace of mind and deep happiness I had been searching for. The more I thought about it, the more potential improvements I saw. As I started to see all the positive things that would flood into my life through the cultivation of good habits, I grew excited. But I realized that Julian was talking about far more than the importance of daily exercise, a healthy diet, and a balanced lifestyle. What he had learned in the Himalayas was deeper and more meaningful than this. He spoke of the importance of building strength of character, developing mental toughness, and living with courage. He told me that these three attributes would lead one not only to a virtuous life, but to a life filled with achievement, satisfaction, and inner peace. Courage was a quality everyone could cultivate, and one that would pay huge dividends over the long run. What does courage have to do with self-leadership and personal development? I wondered aloud. Courage allows you to run your own race. Courage allows you to do whatever you want to do because you know that it is right. Courage gives you the self-control to persist where others have failed. Ultimately, the degree of courage you live with determines the amount of fulfillment you receive. It allows you to truly realize all the exquisite wonders of the epic that is your life. And those who master themselves have an abundance of courage. Okay, I am starting to understand the power of working on myself. Where do I start? Julian returned to his conversation with Yogi Raman, high atop the mountains, on what he remembered as a remarkably starry and gloriously beautiful night. Initially, I too had trouble with the notion of self-improvement. After all, I was a tough, Harvard-trained legal gunslinger who had no time for New Age theories forced on me by what I thought were people with bad haircuts who hung out at airports. I was wrong. It was this closed-mindedness that was holding my life back all of those years. The more I listened to Yogi Raman, the more I reflected on the pain and suffering of my former world, the more I welcomed the philosophy of Kaizen, constant and never-ending enrichment of the mind, body, and soul into my new life, Julian asserted. Why am I hearing so much about the mind, body, and soul these days? It seems I can't even turn on the tube without someone making mention of it. This is the trilogy of your human endowments. To improve your mind without the cultivation of your physical gifts would be a very hollow victory. Elevating your mind and body to their highest level without nurturing your soul would leave you feeling very empty and unfulfilled. But when you dedicate your energies to unlocking the full potential of all three of your human endowments, you will taste the divine ecstasy of an enlightened life. You've got me pretty excited, pal. As to your question about where to start, I promise that I will give you a number of ancient yet powerful techniques in a few moments. But first, I must share a practical illustration with you. Get into push-up position. Good grief, Julian's become a drill sergeant, I silently thought. Being curious and wishing to keep my cup empty, I complied. Now, do as many push-ups as you can possibly do. Don't stop until you truly are certain that you cannot do any more. I struggled with the exercise, my 215-pound frame not being used to much more than walking to the nearest McDonald's with my kids, or meandering through a round of golf with my law partners. The first 15 push-ups were pure agony. With the heat of that summer evening adding to my discomfort, I started to sweat profusely. However, I was determined not to show any signs of weakness, and carried on until my vanity started to give way along with my arms. At 23 push-ups, I gave up. No more, Julian, this is killing me. What are you trying to do here? Are you certain that you can't do any more? I'm sure. Come on, give me a break. The only lesson I'm going to learn from this is what to do for a heart attack. Do 10 more, then you can rest, commanded Julian. You've got to be kidding. But I continued. 1, 2, 5, 8, and finally 10. I lay on the floor in total exhaustion. I went through precisely the same experience with Yogi Raman the night he shared his special fable with me, said Julian. He told me that pain was a great teacher. What could anyone possibly learn from an experience like this? I asked breathlessly. Yogi Raman, and all of the sages of Sivana for that matter, believed that people grow the most when they enter the zone of the unknown. Okay, but what does that have to do with making me do all those push-ups? You told me after you had done 23 that you couldn't do any more. You told me that this was your absolute limit. Yet when I challenged you to do more, you responded with another 10 push-ups. You had more inside you, and when you reached for your resources, you received more. Yogi Raman explained a fundamental truth to me while I was his student. The only limits on your life are those that you set yourself. When you dare to get out of your circle of comfort and explore the unknown, you start to liberate your true human potential. This is the first step towards self-mastery, and mastery over every other circumstance in your life. When you push beyond your limits, just as you did in this little demonstration, you unlock mental and physical reserves that you never thought you had. Fascinating, I thought. Come to think of it, I had recently read in a book that the average person uses only a minute measure of his human capacity. I wondered what we could do if we started using the remaining reservoir of our abilities. Julian sensed he was on a roll. You practice the art of Kaizen by pushing yourself daily. Work hard to improve your mind and body. Nourish your spirit. Do the things you fear. Start to live with unbridled energy and limitless enthusiasm. Watch the sunrise. Dance in a rain shower. Be the person you dream of being. Do the things you have always wanted to do, but didn't because you tricked yourself into believing that you were too young, too old, too rich or too poor. Prepare to live a soaring, fully alive life. In the East, they say that luck favors the prepared mind. I believe that life favors the prepared mind. Julian continued his passionate discourse. Identify the things that are holding you back. Are you scared of speaking? Or do you have trouble in your relationships? Do you lack a positive attitude? Or do you need more energy? Make a written inventory of your weaknesses. Satisfied people are far more thoughtful than others. Take the time to reflect on what it is that might be keeping you from the life you really want and know deep down you can have. Once you have identified what your weaknesses are, the next step is to face them head on and attack your fears. If you fear public speaking, sign up to give 20 speeches. If you fear starting a new business or getting out of a dissatisfying relationship, muster every ounce of your inner resolve and do it. This might be the first taste of real freedom that you have experienced in years. Fear is nothing more than a mental monster you have created, a negative stream of consciousness. Fear is nothing more than a negative stream of consciousness. I like that. You mean all my fears are nothing more than imaginary little gremlins that have crept into my mind over the years? Exactly, John. Every time they have prevented you from taking some action, you have added fuel to their fire. But when you conquer your fears, you conquer your life. I need an example. Sure. Let's take public speaking, an activity most people fear more than death itself. When I was a litigator, I actually saw lawyers who were scared of stepping into court. They would do anything, including settling their clients' otherwise worthy cases, just to avoid the pain of getting up on their feet inside a packed courtroom. I've seen them too. Do you actually think that they were born with this fear? I sure hope not. Study a baby. She has no limits. Her mind is a lush landscape of potential and possibility. Properly cultivated, it will lead her to greatness. Filled with negativity, it will lead her to mediocrity at best. What I am saying is this. No experience, whether it is public speaking or asking your boss for a raise, or swimming in a sun-soaked lake, or walking along the beach on a moonlit night, is inherently painful or pleasant. It is your thinking that makes it so. Interesting. A baby could be trained to view a glorious sunny day as depressing. A child could be trained to see a puppy as a vicious animal. An adult could be trained to see a drug as a pleasant vehicle for release. It's all a matter of conditioning, isn't it? Sure. The same holds true of fear. Fear is a conditioned response, a life-sucking habit that can easily consume your energy, creativity, and spirit if you are not careful. When fear rears its ugly head, beat it down quickly. The best way to do that is to do the thing you fear. Understand the anatomy of fear. It is your own creation. Like any other creation, it is just as easy to tear it down as it is to erect it. Methodically search for and then destroy every fear that has secretly slid into the fortress of your mind. This alone will give you enormous confidence, happiness, and peace of mind. Can a person's mind actually be fully fearless? I asked. Great question. The answer is an unequivocal and emphatic yes. Each and every one of the sages of Sivana was absolutely fearless. You could see it in the way they walked. You could see it in the way they talked. You could see it when you looked deep into their eyes. And I'll tell you something else, John. What? I asked, fascinated by what I was hearing. I too am fearless. I know myself, and I have come to see that my natural state is one of indomitable strength and unlimited potential. It was just that I was blocked by all those years of self-neglect and unbalanced thinking. I'll tell you another thing. When you erase fear from your mind, you start to look younger, and your health becomes more vibrant. Ah, the old mind-body connection, I replied, hoping to mask my ignorance. Yes, the sages of the East have known about it for over 5,000 years. Hardly new age, he said, with a broad grin lighting up his radiant face. The sages shared another powerful principle with me that I think about often. I think it will be invaluable to you as you walk the path of self-leadership and personal mastery. It has given me motivation at times when I feel like taking things easy. The philosophy can be stated succinctly. What sets highly actualized people apart from those who never live inspired lives is that they do those things that less developed people don't like doing, even though they might not like doing them either. Truly enlightened people, those who experience deep happiness daily, are prepared to put off short-term pleasure for the sake of long-term fulfillment. So they tackle their weaknesses and fears head-on, even if dipping into the zone of the unknown brings with it a measure of discomfort. They resolve to live by the wisdom of Kaizen, improving every aspect of themselves ceaselessly and continuously. With time, things that were once difficult become easy. Fears that once prevented them from all the happiness, health, and prosperity they deserved fall to the wayside like stick men toppled by a hurricane. So you're suggesting that I must change myself before I change my life? Yes. It's like that old story my favorite professor told me when I was in law school. One night a father was relaxing with his newspaper after a long day at the office. His son, who wanted to play, kept on pestering him. Finally, fed up, the father ripped out a picture of the globe that was in the paper and tore it into 100 tiny pieces. "Here, son, go ahead and try and put this back together," he said, hoping that this would keep the little boy busy long enough for him to finish reading his paper. To his amazement, his son returned after only 1 minute with the globe perfectly back together. When the startled father asked how he achieved this feat, the son smiled gently and replied, "Dad, on the other side of the globe there was a picture of a person, and once I got the person together, the world was okay." That's a great story. You see, John, the wisest people I have ever met, from the sages of Sivana to my professors at Harvard Law School, all seem to know the key formula for happiness. "Do continue," I said, with a hint of impatience. "It's precisely what I said earlier. Happiness comes through the progressive realization of a worthy objective. When you are doing what you truly love to do, you are bound to find deep contentment. If happiness comes to everyone who simply does what they love doing, why are so many people miserable?" "Fair point, John. Doing what you love, whether this means giving up the work you are presently doing to become an actor, or spending less time on those things that are less important to make time for those things that are more meaningful, requires a great deal of courage. It requires you to step out of your comfort zone. And change is always a little uncomfortable at first. It is also more than a little risky. Having said this, this is the surest way to design a more joyful life." Exactly how does one go about building courage? It's the same as the story. Once you get yourself together, your world will be okay. Once you master your mind, body, and character, happiness and abundance will flow into your life almost magically. But you must spend some time daily working on yourself, even if for only 10 or 15 minutes. And what does the 9-foot-tall, 900-pound Japanese sumo wrestler symbolize in Yogi Raman's fable? "Our hefty friend will be your constant reminder of the power of Kaizen, the Japanese word for constant self-expansion and progress." In just a few hours, Julian had revealed the most powerful and the most astonishing information that I had ever heard in my lifetime. I had learned of the magic in my own mind and its treasure trove of potential. I had learned highly practical techniques to still the mind and focus its power on my desires and dreams. I had learned the importance of having a definite purpose in life and of setting clear goals in every aspect of my personal, professional, and spiritual world. now I had been exposed to the ageless principle of self-mastery, Kaizen. How can I practice the art of Kaizen? I will give you 10 ancient yet supremely effective rituals that will lead you far along the path of personal mastery. If you apply them on a daily basis, with faith in their utility, you will observe remarkable results in just 1 month from today. If you continue to apply them, incorporating the techniques into your routine such that they become habits, you are bound to reach a state of perfect health, limitless energy, lasting happiness, and peace of mind. Ultimately, you will reach your divine destiny, for this is your birthright. Yogi Raman offered the 10 rituals to me with great faith in what he termed their exquisiteness, and I think you will agree that I am living proof of their power. I simply ask that you listen to what I have to say and judge the results for yourself. Life-changing results in only 30 days? I asked in disbelief. Yes. The quid pro quo is that you must set aside at least 1 hour a day for 30 consecutive days to practice the strategies I am about to offer to you. This investment in yourself is all it takes. And please don't tell me that you don't have the time. But I don't, I said honestly. My practice is really booming. I don't have 10 minutes to myself, let alone a full hour, Julian. As I told you, saying that you do not have the time to improve yourself, whether this means improving your mind or nourishing your spirit, is much like saying you do not have the time to stop for gas because you are too busy driving. Eventually it will catch up with you. Really? Really. How so? Let me put it this way. You are very much like a high-performance race car worth millions of dollars, a well-oiled, highly sophisticated machine. Why, thank you, Julian. Your mind is the greatest wonder of the universe, and your body has the capacity to perform feats that might astonish you. Agreed. Knowing the value of this high-performance, multi-million-dollar machine, would it be wise to run it full out every minute of every day without taking a pit stop to let the motor cool down? Of course not. Well then, why are you not taking some time every day for your personal pit stop or rest break? Why are you not taking the time to cool down the high-performance engine of your mind? Do you see my point? Taking the time to renew yourself is the most important thing you can do. Ironically, taking time out from your hectic schedule for self-improvement and personal enrichment will dramatically improve your effectiveness once you get back into it. 1 hour a day for 30 days is all it takes? It's the magic formula I was always searching for. I would probably have paid a couple of $1 million for it in my old glory days if I had understood its importance. Little did I know that it was free, as is all priceless knowledge. Having said this, you must be disciplined and apply the strategies that make up the formula daily with utter conviction in their value. This is not a quick fix type deal. Once you are in it for the long term. What do you mean? Spending 1 hour a day tending to yourself will surely give you dramatic results in 30 days, provided you do the right things. It takes about 1 month to fully install a new habit. After this period, the strategies and techniques you will learn will fit like a second skin. The key is that you must keep on practicing them every day if you want to keep on seeing the results. Fair enough, I agreed. Julian clearly had unlocked a wellspring of personal vitality and inner serenity in his own life. Actually, his transformation from a sickly old litigator to a radiant, energetic philosopher was nothing less than miraculous. At that moment, I resolved to dedicate 1 hour a day to implementing the techniques and principles I was about to hear. I decided to work on improving myself before working to change others, as had been my habit. Maybe I too could undergo a mantle-like transformation. It was surely worth a try. That night, sitting on the floor of my cluttered living room, I learned what Julian called the 10 rituals of radiant living. Some of them required a little concentrated effort on my part. Others could be performed effortlessly. All were intriguing and rich with the promise of extraordinary things to come. The first strategy was known to the sages as the ritual of solitude. This involves nothing more than ensuring that your daily schedule includes a mandatory period of peace. Just what is a period of peace? It is a period of time, as little as 15 minutes or as much as 50, wherein you explore the healing power of silence and come to know who you really are, Julian explained. Sort of a rest break for that overheated engine of mine, I suggested with a slight smile. That's a pretty accurate way of looking at it. Have you ever been on a long road trip with your family? Sure. Every summer we drive down to the islands to spend a couple of weeks with Jenny's parents. Okay. Do you ever make pit stops along the way? Yes, for food, or if I'm feeling a little sleepy, I'll take a quick nap after having listened to my kids fight in the back seat for 6 hours. Well, think of the ritual of solitude as a pit stop for the soul. Its purpose is self-renewal, and this is accomplished by spending time alone, immersed in the beautiful blanket of silence. What is so special about silence? Good question. Solitude and quiet connect you to your creative source and release the limitless intelligence of the universe. You see, John, the mind is like a lake. In our chaotic world, most people's minds are not still. We are full of inner turbulence. However, by simply taking the time to be still and quiet every day, the lake of the mind becomes as smooth as a plate of glass. This inner quietness brings with it a wealth of benefits, including a deep sense of well-being, inner peace, and boundless energy. You will even sleep better and enjoy a renewed feeling of balance in your day-to-day activities. Where should I go for this period of peace? Theoretically, you could do it anywhere, from your bedroom to your office. The key is to find a place of true quiet and beauty. How does beauty fit into the equation? Beautiful images soothe a ruffled soul, Julian observed with a deep sigh. A bouquet of roses or a simple solitary daffodil will have a highly salutary effect on your senses and relax you no end. Ideally, you should savor such beauty in a space that will serve as a sanctuary of the self. What's that? Basically, it is a place that will become your secret forum for mental and spiritual expansion. This might be a spare room in your house, or simply a peaceful corner of a small apartment. The point is to reserve a spot for your renewal activities, a place that sits there, quietly awaiting your arrival. I love the sound of that. I think having a silent place to go to when I come home from work would make a world of difference. I could decompress for a while and let go of the stresses of the day. It would probably make me a much nicer person to be around. That brings up another important point. The ritual of solitude works best when you practice it at the same time every day. Why? Because then it becomes integrated into your routine as a ritual. By practicing it at the same time every day, a daily dose of silence will soon become a habit that you will never forget. And positive life habits inevitably guide you to your destiny. Anything else? Yes. If at all possible, commune with nature daily. A quick walk through the woods, or even a few minutes spent cultivating your tomato garden in the backyard, will reconnect you to the wellspring of calm that may now be dormant within you. Being with nature also allows you to tune in to the infinite wisdom of your highest self. This self-knowledge will move you into the uncharted dimensions of your personal power. Never forget this, advised Julian, his voice rising with passion. Has this ritual worked well for you, Julian? Absolutely. I rise with the sun, and the first thing I do is head off to my secret sanctuary. There I explore the heart of the rose for as long as need be. Some days I spend hours in quiet contemplation. On other days I spend only 10 minutes. The result is more or less the same. A deep sense of inner harmony and an abundance of physical energy. Which brings me to the second ritual. This is the ritual of physicality. Sounds interesting. What's it about? It's about the power of physical care. Huh? It's simple. The ritual of physicality is based on the principle that says as you care for the body, so you care for the mind. As you prepare your body, so you prepare your mind. As you train your body, so you train your mind. Take some time every day to nourish the temple of your body through vigorous exercise. Get your blood circulating and your body moving. Did you know that there are 168 hours in a week? No, not really. It's true. At least 5 of those hours should be invested in some form of physical activity. The sages of Sivana practiced the ancient discipline of yoga to awaken their physical potential and live a strong, dynamic existence. It was an extraordinary sight to see these marvelous physical specimens who had managed to age-proof their lives, standing on their heads in the center of their village. Have you tried yoga, Julian? Jenny started practicing it last summer and says it has added 5 years to her life. There is no one strategy that will magically transform your life, John. Let me be the first to say this. Lasting and profound change comes through the continued application of a number of the methods I have shared with you. But yoga is an extremely effective way to unlock your reserves of vitality. I do my yoga every morning, and it is one of the best things that I do for myself. It not only rejuvenates my body, it completely focuses my mind. It has even unblocked my creativity. It is a terrific discipline. Did the sages do anything else to care for their bodies? Yogi Raman and his brothers and sisters also believed that vigorous walking in natural surroundings, whether high on the mountain paths or deep in the lush forests, worked wonders for relieving fatigue and restoring the body to its natural state of vibrancy. When the weather was too harsh to walk, they would exercise within the security of their huts. They might miss a meal, but they would never miss their daily round of exercise. What did they have in their huts? Nordic track machines? I quipped. Not quite. Sometimes they would practice yoga postures. Other times, I would catch a glimpse of them doing a set or two of one-handed push-ups. I really think it didn't matter too much to them what they did, so long as they moved their bodies and got the fresh air of their breathtaking surroundings flowing through their lungs. What does breathing fresh air have to do with anything? I'll answer your question with one of Yogi Raman's favorite sayings. To breathe properly is to live properly. Breathing is that important? I asked in surprise. Quite early on in Sivana, the sages taught me that the fastest way to double or even triple the amount of energy I had was to learn the art of effective breathing. But don't we all know how to breathe, even a newborn baby? Not really, John. While most of us know how to breathe to survive, we have never learned how to breathe to thrive. Most of us breathe far too shallowly, and in so doing, we fail to take in enough oxygen to run the body at an optimal level. Sounds like proper breathing involves a lot of science. It does, and the sages treated it that way. Their philosophy was simple. Take in more oxygen through efficient breathing, and you liberate your energy reserves along with your natural state of vitality. Okay, so where do I start? It's actually pretty easy. 2 or 3 times a day, take a minute or two to think about breathing more deeply and effectively. How do I know if I'm breathing effectively? Well, your belly should move out slightly. This indicates that you are breathing from the abdomen, which is good. A trick that Yogi Raman taught me was to cup my hands over my stomach. If they moved out as I inhaled, my breathing technique was proper. Very interesting. If you like that, then you will love the third ritual of radiant living, said Julian. Which is? The ritual of live nourishment. In my days as a litigator, I lived off of a steady diet of steaks, fries, and other types of junk food. Sure, I ate at the finest restaurants in the country, but I still filled my body with junk. I didn't know it at the time, but this was one of the main sources of my discontent. Really? Yes. A poor diet has a pronounced effect on your life. It drains your mental and physical energy. It affects your moods, and it hampers the clarity of your mind. Yogi Raman put it this way, as you nourish your body, so you nourish your mind. I assume then that you changed your diet. Radically. And it made an amazing difference in the way I felt and looked. I always thought that I was so run down because of the stresses and strains of my work, and because the wrinkled fingers of old age were reaching out for me. In Sivana, I learned that much of my lethargy was due to the low-octane fuel I was pumping into my body. What did the sages of Sivana eat to stay so youthful and bright? Live foods, came the efficient reply. Huh? Live foods are the answer. Live foods are foods that are not dead. Come on, Julian, what are live foods? I asked impatiently. Basically, live foods are those that are created through the natural interaction of the sun, air, soil, and water. What I'm talking about here is a vegetarian diet. Fill your plate with fresh vegetables, fruits, and grains, and you might just live forever. Is that possible? Most of the sages were well over 100, and they showed no signs of slowing down. And just last week I read in the paper about a group of people living on the tiny island of Okinawa in the East China Sea. Researchers are flocking to the island because they are fascinated by the fact that it holds the largest concentration of centenarians in the world. What have they learned? That a vegetarian diet is one of their main longevity secrets. But is this type of diet healthy? You wouldn't think that it would give you much strength. Remember, I'm still a busy litigator, Julian. This is the diet that nature intended. It is alive, vital, and supremely healthy. The sages have lived by this diet for many thousands of years. They call it a sattvic, or pure, diet. And as to your concern about strength, the most powerful animals on the planet, ranging from gorillas to elephants, wear the badge of proud vegetarians. Did you know that a gorilla has about 30 times the strength of a man? Thanks for that important tidbit of information. Look, the sages are not extreme people. All of their wisdom was based on the ageless principle that one must live a life of moderation and do nothing to extremes. So if you like meat, you can certainly keep eating it. Just remember that you are ingesting dead food. If you can, cut back on the amount of red meat that you eat. It is really hard to digest, and since your digestive system is one of the most energy-consuming processes of your entire body, valuable energy reserves are needlessly depleted by this foodstuff. Do you see what I'm getting at? Just compare how you feel after eating a steak with your energy levels after eating a salad. If you don't want to become a strict vegetarian, at least start having a salad with every meal and fruit for dessert. Even this will make a huge difference in the quality of your physical life. That doesn't seem like it would be too hard to do, I replied. I've been hearing a lot about the power of a largely vegetarian diet. Just last week, Jenny told me about a study in Finland where it was found that 38% of new vegetarians studied reported that they felt far less tired and much more alert after only 7 months of this new way of life. I should try eating a salad with every meal. Looking at you, Julian, I might even make the salad the meal. Try it for about a month and judge the results for yourself. You will feel phenomenal. Okay, if it's good enough for the sages, it's good enough for me. I promise you, I will give it a shot. It doesn't sound like too much of a stretch. And anyway, I'm getting pretty tired of firing up the barbecue every night. If I have sold you on the ritual of live nourishment, I think you will love the fourth one. Your student is still holding his empty cup. The fourth ritual is known as the ritual of abundant knowledge. It centers on the whole notion of lifelong learning and expanding your knowledge base for the good of yourself and all those around you. The old knowledge is power idea. It involves far more than that, John. Knowledge is only potential power. For the power to be manifested, it must be applied. Most people know what they should do in any given situation, or in their lives for that matter. The problem is that they don't take daily consistent action to apply the knowledge and realize their dreams. The ritual of abundant knowledge is all about becoming a student of life. Even more importantly, it requires that you use what you have learned in the classroom of your existence. What did Yogi Raman and the other sages do to live this ritual? They had many sub-rituals that they performed on a daily basis as a tribute to the ritual of abundant knowledge. One of the most important strategies is also one of the easiest. You can even start doing it today. It won't take up too much time, will it? Julian smiled. These techniques, tools, and tips I am sharing with you will make you more productive and effective than you have ever been. Don't be penny wise, pound foolish. Consider those who say they do not have the time to back up their computers because they are too busy working on them. Yet when those machines crash and months of important work is lost, they regret not investing a few moments a day in saving it. Do you see my point? Get my priorities straight? Exactly. Try not to live your life bound by the shackles of your schedule. Instead, focus on those things that your conscience and your heart tell you to do. When you invest in yourself and start to devote yourself to raising your mind, body, and character to their highest levels, you will almost feel as if you have a personal navigator inside you, telling you which things you must do to see the greatest and most rewarding results. You will stop worrying about your clock and start living your life. Point well taken. So what was that simple sub-ritual you were about to teach me? I asked. Read regularly. Reading for 30 minutes a day will do wonders for you. But I must caution you. Do not read just anything. You must be very selective about what you put into the lush garden of your mind. It must be immensely nourishing. Make it something that will improve both you and the quality of your life. What did the sages read? They spent many of their waking moments reading and rereading the ancient teachings of their ancestors. They devoured this philosophical literature. I still remember seeing these wonderful-looking people seated on little bamboo chairs, reading their strangely bound books with the subtle smiles of enlightenment unfolding across their lips. It was in Sivana that I really learned the power of the book and the principle that a book is the best friend of the wise. So I should start reading every good book I can get my hands on? Yes and no, came the reply. I would never tell you not to read as many books as you can. But remember, some books are meant to be tasted, some books are meant to be chewed, and finally, some books are meant to be swallowed whole. Which brings me to another point. You're feeling hungry? No, John, Julian laughed. I simply want to tell you that to truly get the best out of a great book, you must study it, not just read it. Go through it as you do when you read those contracts your big clients bring to you for your legal opinion. Really consider it. Work with it. Become one with it. The sages would read many of the books of wisdom in their vast library 10 or 15 times. They treated great books as scriptures, holy documents of divine origin. Wow, reading is really that important? 30 minutes a day will make a delightful difference in your life because you will quickly start to see the vast reserves of knowledge available for your use. Every answer to every problem you have ever faced is in print. If you want to be a better lawyer, father, friend, or lover, there are books out there that will rocket you to those goals. All the mistakes you will ever make in your life have already been made by those that have walked before you. Do you really think that the challenges you are facing are unique to you? I've never thought about it, Julian. But I see what you're saying, and I know you're right. All the problems anyone has ever faced and will ever face over the course of their lifetime have already been made, Julian asserted. More importantly, the answers and solutions are all recorded on the pages of books. Read the right books. Learn how those who have preceded you have handled the challenges you are currently facing. Apply their strategies for success, and you will be astonished by the improvements you will note in your life. What exactly are the right books? I asked, quickly realizing that Julian's point was an excellent one. I'll leave that to your good judgment, my friend. Personally, since I have returned from the East, I spend the better part of my days reading biographies of the men and women I have come to admire, and a great deal of the wisdom literature. Any titles you could recommend to an eager young beaver? I said, flashing a broad grin. Sure. You will thrive on the biography of the great American Benjamin Franklin. I think you will also find much growth impetus from Mahatma Gandhi's autobiography, entitled The Story of My Experiments with Truth. I also suggest that you read Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, The Highly Practical Philosophy of Marcus Aurelius, and some of the work of Seneca. You might even read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I read it last week and thought it was very profound. Think and Grow Rich? I exclaimed. But I thought you left all of that behind you after your heart attack. I'm really sick and tired of all the make-money-fast manuals that are being peddled out there by snake oil salesmen preying on the weak. Easy, big fella. I couldn't agree with you more, offered Julian, with all the warmth and patience of a wise, loving grandfather. I, too, want to restore the character ethic to our society. That little book is not about making a lot of money. It is about making a lot of life. I will be the first to tell you that there is a huge difference between well-being and being well off. I've lived it, and know the pain of a money-driven life. Think and Grow Rich is about abundance, including spiritual abundance, and how to attract all that is good into your life. You might do well to read it, but I will not press the point. Sorry, Julian. I didn't mean to sound like an aggressive litigator, I offered apologetically. I guess my temper gets the better of me sometimes. One more thing I need to improve. I really am grateful for all that you are sharing with me. No problem. Water under the bridge. My point simply is read and keep reading. Do you want to know something else interesting?
What?
It's not what you will get out of the books that is so enriching. It is what the books will get out of you that will ultimately change your life. You see, John, books do not actually teach you anything new.
Really?
Really. Books simply help you to see what is already within yourself. That's what enlightenment is all about. After all my journeying and exploring, I found that I have actually come full circle, back to the point from which I started as a young boy. But now I know myself and all that I am and can be. So the ritual of abundant knowledge is all about reading and exploring the wealth of information out there. Partly. For now, read 30 minutes a day. The rest will come naturally, Julian said with a hint of mystery. Okay, what's the fifth ritual of radiant living? It is the ritual of personal reflection. The sages were firm believers in the power of inner contemplation. By taking the time to get to know yourself, you will connect to a dimension of your being that you never knew you had. Sounds pretty deep. It's actually a very practical concept. You see, we all have many sleeping talents inside of us. By taking the time to get to know them, we kindle them. However, silent contemplation will deliver even more than this. This practice will make you stronger, more at ease with yourself, and wiser. It is a very rewarding use of your mind. I'm still a little fuzzy on the concept, Julian. Fair enough. It was all so foreign to me when I first heard it. Boiled down to its basic form, personal reflection